To headlines, this is David Lichtenstein, and this week we have a very interesting program. We're going to be speaking about Shabbos ovens, refrigerators on Shabbos, etc., etc. In this new electronic age, it's really gotten quite complicated, and we have a number of wonderful guests. We have Abelza Talmud Chacham, a very big expert in this. He's written Sfarim about technology. He's the son of the Belza Dayan. His name is Rav Tzvi, who's an expert on Grumma and Shabbos. We will have from the Star K, Yona Attensasser, who is their engineer and expert on the technology of Shabbos. And we'll finish with a marvelous Chesed and Tzedakah story of something really unusual and special, Rabbi Ezra Schwartz from the Upper West Side. So we have a wonderful program. You can listen to us Matzah Shabbos, 11 to 12 midnight, on WMCA at 5:70 a.m. on Nachum Siegel Network, or at WMCA.com. Monday morning again at 11 a.m. on NachumSiegel.com. You can find all our shows at HeadlinesBook.com under the audio and podcast section. I saw recently we had over 160,000 hits between our three or four different sites. People listening on their podcast at their own pleasure, going to or from work. And you can always listen to us on our hotline at 732-806-8700. You can send us any questions or comments at info@headlinesbook.com. And I'd like to start the show by reading a letter that we got from one of our guests. And I thought it was a very nice letter. It's from Mr. Pruzansky. I don't want to mention his first name. I don't know if he wanted me to. And it's titled, "You Saved My Olam Haba." Honestly, be happy to hear that we're making a little bit of a difference, because I'm a novice at I'm not exactly a rabbi, and you have to be careful. I heard that there was a younger man, a big Talmud Chacham. He became a rabbi and somebody in his shul died, and he went, so we are making a difference. Listen to this, Mr. Pruzansky, "You saved my olam haba." Well, here's the email. "I'll be honest to say that I rarely listen to your show. I'm really in my car. But I happened to be on July 30th, happened to be in my car, and I could have listened to music, so I listened to your show. Your topic was Ribbis, and since I work for a Jewish organization, my responsibility doesn't include anything that would pertain to Ribbis. It wasn't a topic that interested me, but I listened anyway. You had Diane Cohen on your show, and even though it wasn't on your list of things, somehow the conversation turned to Quicken Loans and how the owner is a Jew, and it's usher to do business with him, and if you do, you could lose your olam haba. Suffice to say, it made me sweat. My mortgage is from Quicken. I called my Rav the next morning. He was on vacation. I repeated what I heard on the air. He said he would research it. He called back to confirm that you and Diane Cohen said was true, and I should try to get Dan Gilbert to sign a Shtar Iska." Dan Gilbert is the owner of Quicken Loans, which is the largest mortgage company for home mortgages in the United States. Good luck. "Suffice to say, I didn't go too far and I decided that my olam haba was more important than the low rate, and I refinanced through a firm broker with the stipulation that he had to check the yichus of the mortgage bank to make sure it wasn't Jewish blood. It wasn't over on Ribbis. He did. I refinanced. It had a lower rate. Talk about hashgacha. So thank you for the role you played in unwittingly helping a yid avoid a terrible avera. Keep up your great work for Klal Yisrael, etc." So it is nice when we do get a decent amount of feedback. This was a particularly enjoyable letter. Before we go to our guests, I would like to just say a small vart. People say that sorry is the hardest word to say. So really hard to apologize. But I want to give you a different twist on it. Because we're coming up to the Elul is all about tshuva. Harata ala avar, Kabbalah ala asirin, but it's also been adam lachaveri. The Rambam says in Shulchan Aruch Paskins that Yom Kippur is only mechaper, only atones for averis, for sins that are between God and man, man and God. But between man and man, Hashem doesn't forgive. He's lav bal dvarim. It's not, how could he forgive what you did to somebody else? So we really do have to search into our souls for our relationships to say, "I'm sorry." And I know we all hurt some people during the course of a year. But think of it something interesting. If the taxman comes to collect, he doesn't say I'm sorry, even if he feels bad, because he has no choice. A policeman, even if he's a kind policeman giving a ticket, he has no choice. Sorry means where I'm responsible. I had options. I own the situations. I did the wrong thing. I say I'm sorry. If you have no control, you can't say you're sorry. If it's somebody else's fault, you can't say you're sorry. Look at Adam Arishan. What did he do after he was chayta? He said, Ha'isha asher nasata imadi. It wasn't up to me. It was her fault. I had no responsibility. Then Cain goes and he says, Hashem Merachi, also constant revocation of responsibility. But what does that mean when you revoke responsibility, when you abdicate? It means that I don't really control my life. I'm a backseat driver. Have you ever been a backseat driver? But have you ever been a backseat driver and know how uncomfortable that is? How would you like to be a backseat driver on your entire life? That would be horrible. That's a victim. That's the opposite of self-empowerment. Yiddishkeit is very against that. Everyone, Adam, Nivra, Yechidi, each of one is empowered with our own life. When we say, I'm sorry, what are we really saying? We're saying, I could have done different. I'm in control. I could have behaved different. I'm not a victim. Nobody controls me. I'm not Ha'isha Asher Nasati Imadi. I'm not a slave to anybody. So by saying I'm sorry, it's really a statement of, you know, I'm self-empowered. I control my behavior. And therefore, I'm responsible for what I did wrong, and I'm sorry. You know, responsibility is the cost of being free, of being a Ben Chayrin. Ben Chayrin means I'm autonomous. And therefore, I'm responsible. By saying I'm sorry, it's really proof of my bechira, of my choice, of my individuality, of my self-ownership. So there's really something very beautiful about saying I'm sorry. It says that I am a Baal Bechira and a Ben Chayrin. So that when we apologize to those we love, yes, there's something always humbling about it, but there's something grand about it, which is why the first person to say I'm sorry was Yehuda, who's Malchus, the king. Because somebody, a king, has to be autonomous. Libay Levav Kol Yisrael, the leader of the people, he could say, I'm sorry. He recognizes the power of being independent. Let's go to our guests. We have a fabulous group of people tonight. Let's go to the room. We have on the phone with us, from Brooklyn, Harav Tzvi Ortner, who's the head of the Halacha and Technology Institute. He's the son-in-law of the Belzadayan of Borough Park. And his father is the chief rabbi of Lud. He's a muhsmach from a Rav HaGoyin, Rabbi Cheskel Roth. He's a mechabes sfarim, machsheves hatzvi. Welcome, Rav Ortner.
Shalom aleichem, Rav David.
So we would like to discuss something that we're seeing it now, but whatever we see now is a bavua de bavua of what's going to be coming in the next 10 years. And that is how technology has pervaded and invaded basically every appliance we use, ovens, refrigerators, and a lot of people just have no idea about it, how to deal with it. And being that you've created an entire institute to deal with it, we thought you would be the appropriate person to interview. Could you tell us, tell us a little bit about what your institute does, give us a little bit of hagdama, and then let me ask you some halacha shailas.
Well, halacha and technology today is a very hot topic, but I wouldn't say just today. We're talking about many years since electricity and technology comes into our life in many ways, much more lately, but in the last century, we were, you know, it is all around electronics machines. And I would say it's my chedushim. You know, there's many institutions already, you know, in Israel and some here, trying to handle the situation. We believe in the opinion that we can take care of these things. There's many people, there's many Jewish customers, and we can try to fix things. Many others will say, you know, this is the situation, try to live with that. So that's basically what we're trying to do in many fields, try to correct things, to fix it, to make it work according to the halacha.
So talk to me, to your regular Yiddish balabas. He has an oven on Shabbos, right? What are the problems that he should be aware of?
So, oven on Shabbos. Oven on Shabbos I will take into three parts. First of all, that there is the heat element. Even if you're talking about a gas oven or you're talking about an electric oven, both of them considered Gechelet and Matchas, which is, according to most of the mainstream poskim, a Melocha Deraisa on Shabbos. We are not doing it, directly. You're not turning on directly every time you open the door. But you're definitely causing, by thermostat, the fire to turn on and off.
So again, Rabbi Orton, we're not talking about the stovetop. We're talking about the inside of the oven.
Yes,
so
of course.
When you open the door, cold air enters into the cavity of the oven, and it could trigger many times for the element to go on. So it would be a grumma, a causality of a malacha daraisa, correct?
Yes. So grumma for malacha daraisa, it's a very complicated sugya. I wouldn't say it's just a machleik and mechaber amor, because there's many places in Shulchan Aruch where even the mechaber is machmir about grumma. Grumma is a heavy sugya. We can get into details. I don't think that's the purpose of the interview, but Gwoma is complicated, sometimes it is Chiyuv Chatos, sometimes it's the Rabbonon, sometimes it's Mutar.
Well, the Machaba, the Ramah in Shin Lamed Aleph, I believe, says that a Gwoma on Shabbos is Aser, except the Makom Pseida, is that correct?
Yes. But even the Machaba in Shin Lamed Aleph is Meikle about Gwoma, but you have the Machaba in Reish Samechei, where it's Machmer about Kiruv Kibui, and there's many definitions about the difference between Reish Samechei and Shin Lamed Aleph. So I wouldn't say it's like a green light for Sephardic people about Gorma and Shabbos. You know, Rabbi Yosef, for example, wrote a tshuva that, you know, Gorma in many cases, Shabbos is also. So it's not just the Ramo in Shin Lamed Aleph. It's more than that.
Okay.
You know, the Ramo in Shin Lamed Aleph is also enough, I'm saying, but... Yeah, so again, we're talking about the Gorma Melocha Deraisa. Again, you can say you're not Mechaven, it's a Gorma B'Psikreisha. Gomer B'Sikreisha V'Issa D'Raisa is also most of the mainstream poskim.
What would be problematic?
Very problematic.
But
so that's basically happening when you're opening the door.
It's not a B'Sikreisha, though. It could or could not happen, right?
Not really, because every time you open the door, you're affecting it by Gomer. Meaning every cold air entering into this cabinet
eventually
will cause at some point eventually, to turn the fire on earlier.
So opening the door is a psikresha, a grumma, which is very problematic.
Yes. At some times, it's not going to be a grumma, it's going to be right away. But most all the time, it's going to be a grumma.
Okay, continue.
So that's the old shaila about ovens. It's nothing new about it.
Which is why most people, I mean all people that I know of, only would open the oven if the light is on. That means the element is actually hot.
Oh, so here you go. You just say two things in one time. The light and on and the element and on, it's not always working together. It used to be like that the light and the ovens will indicate the heat element. In most of the cases today, it's not like this. Most of the cases today just indicate that the machine is working, meaning the oven is working, not just the heat element. There's only one brand still, I think Viking or something like that, that the light is actually indicating the heat element to be on. So most of the cases, you'll need to look into the ovens, you know, through the glass, if you have an oven. And a woven drawer is going to be a little bit harder. But you have to look into it and see if the fire is on. It's going to be an orange color on the bottom. And then is one of the most accepted heter, because then when you open the door, you just continue the situation of the fire to burn a little bit longer.
Okay.
So that's going to be the accepted heter, yeah.
Now, Rabbi, you want to talk about, are there any other problems with ovens that you would like to discuss?
Yes. So when we're talking about ovens, In continuation to the fire issue, you know, there's lately advertised lately that there is a new problem that because of some safety reasons, many companies are putting a safety feature. Then when you open the door, immediately the fire will turn off. And the same thing will happen when you close the door, immediately the fire will turn on, which is much, much more of a, you know, of a direct issue device. So some ovens are under supervision, so the Starcade did a recall on some ovens, and LG and Samsung and Bosch, I think. But I believe that in many other ovens with no supervision, I believe the issue exists. So it's very important for people before they're buying an oven to make sure it doesn't have this feature. In case you have the feature, most of the cases it'll have a button by the door. So you must tape the button with a good seal tape to make sure it's not happening.
Now, Rabbi Yotner, what do you feel about the Starcade's Shabbos ovens, Yom Tov ovens, rather, that come with all these patentin that, you know, you can turn it and there's a delay. I've honestly never seen them. But you turn it and there's a delay and the fire comes on or goes off 10 minutes later, etc. What do you feel about that?
I wouldn't say personally what I feel, but I think Gdol Yisrael 10 years ago considered both things. First of all, to have something built in as a gromer, according to most of the poskim, when you are machaven to do it, it doesn't consider a gromer.
So in other words, you're saying the Rush that talks about Rush and Baba Kama and Asamach, Ruach Besayasa, you're referring to.
Yeah,
maybe or,
yeah,
maybe explain that to our crowd.
Okay, so if you're getting a little bit more into the sugya of gomer, we have two major sugyas in Shas about gomer. The first sugya, as you just mentioned, will come in Samach, that zoyre v'ruach mesayato, people making malecha zoyre, that you're throwing the seed in the wind, and the wind is taking a part of the malocha. So you'll be able to look at as a gomer, but there's still a chi of chatos. The Gemara said because oil v'nisavad machshavtoi, because the results that you wanted happened, even if it happened together with the wind, it's considered a malocha deraisa.
Let me add on to what Rabbi Yotner is saying. The way it's explained by the Achrayim is that if you're using the wind as a tool, let's say you would use an axe to cut down a tree. So you cut it, and suddenly at the end the tree falls by itself. Well, that's not called the grama. You did part of the process of cutting is that eventually the tree falls by the gravity. So if it's so direct, that is not called the grama anymore. Continue.
Yes. Okay, so that's the sugi in Baba Kama. And then we have the sugi in Shabbos daf Kifkuf from Beis, that we have the sugi l'sasek on melocha, the Gemara Darshan, melocha is the usar asiyed also, only if you're doing something. Gromer shoy. And that's basically the source of the sugi in Shilam Adalot, where the Mechaber states that gromer is mutar on Shabbos. And we all know that gromer is basically mutar, and we have the Ramo, only Mimokom Seder, we know it's Isad Rabbonon. But it's a kind of a steer between these two sugyas in Baba Kama and in Shabbos. So I will say, like you just said, there's the Rosh over there and Rashi over there. There's two main mahalchim to answer this steer. The first mahalch is that depends which melocha you're talking about. There's certain melochas that, you know, the melocha itself is with gomer. Let's say you're cooking something. Melechas bishul. You're putting a pot on the fire, but you're not actually cooking. The fire is cooking. But everyone knows that it's a melocha deraisa because that's the way the melocha is created. That's the way the melocha is going on for, you know, from the beginning. That's the way it's happened in the Mishkan, let's say like that. Now, many other melochas that really not coming with goma, you can do it by yourself. But you now are doing it with something else. Let's say there's meleches tchina. Most of the time you're doing it in your hand, but sometimes you can use a machine. That is sugi in Simon Reishon and Beis. That the Mogen Avraham debate with other poskim what the status of meleches tchina berechaim. So that's one mahalach of the sugi. The other mahalach in the sugi says no. It depends if you want the results or not. If you don't really need or want the results, then the gomer is mutar. But if you want it and you make it because of it, then it's a malacha deraisa. That's the sugyo in Baba Kama and Daf Samach. That was the argument in the beginning of the time from turning on electric switch. We're talking about 50 years ago, 70 years ago. It's also basically what you're doing. You're just putting together a bridge, and the electron is running from one side to the other, and then you know the light turn on. You'll be able to consider it as a goma, so it should be on Yesod Rabbon or something like that. But there's a famous truth of a Chamoizer in that time, in Achiezer. The Chamoizer based of this sugyo, and that's you know the source that we just said. Chamoizer said it's considered a Maaseh B'Yadayim. So the refrigerators is a very, very long story. Refrigerators, I would say, there's three generations about refrigerators. Refrigerators, the debate about using a refrigerator in a Shabbos starting as long as refrigerators exist, going back to 70 years ago. But I will put it, to make it short and clear, I will put it in three sections. The first argument about the refrigerators was when you're opening the door and you're bringing the room temperature into the cabinet, which by thermostat, mechanical thermostat, causing the compressor to turn on or off based on the temperature. That was the first conversation about refrigerators. And at that time, most of the Voskim, the opinion was you're allowed to open the refrigerators only when the compressor is on. Until Rabbi Zalman Auerbach came out with his major tshuva and Ibn Mevar al-Heter. I can tell you that there's still many rabbonim or people still machmer of it. For example, I just visited Rosh Yeshiva Rabbi Shmuel Kamenetsky, and he told me that you never open a refrigerator, the old style refrigerators, only with a shinui, with kind of a renovation. And, you know, I confirmed with this Talmud of Kleiman, and he says, yeah, but nobody knows about it. You know, it's his chumra. But you can still find people are machmer of it, but I would say the most accepted, the mainstream opinion is that you are able to open refrigerators at any time.
And the reason is because it's a drabanan, and it's a grama, and it's a dover shein and a skaven. Would those be the three reasons?
Yes, basically. I will add the suffix secretion as well.
Yeah, okay, well...
So that's basically the four tzerufim for Rabbi Shlomo Zalman and the tshuva, right? But the base was that the end result is a compressor, which is nothing more than electric, which I would say, you know, the most accepted opinion is that the issur is only issur de rabbanon.
Correct.
Even Rabbi Shlomo Zalman itself, you know, still choishes to the Chazanish and other many poskim that, you know, issur de issur de raisa, but in this case, he considered the Issur Rabbanan. So that's the first generation of refrigerators, that the result is only a Rabbanan degree result, so you're allowed to open it. A few years after it, came in the issue of defrost. The defrost is something that, you know, it's a feature in the fridge, not necessarily made to make cold the refrigerator. It's actually an oven, like a celestial mattress, made to melt the ice around the refrigerator. And in the first generation of defrost, the defrost used to work on a timer. Every certain amount of hours, depending on every machine, it turns on for a certain amount of time. So it's still not a problem. By the way, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, in a later edition of his tshuva, put a comment in the bottom of the tshuva to make sure that his tshuva is not talking about the new refrigerators with the defrost. Even at that time, I'm assuming the defrost didn't work according to any physical action, just by timer. So what happened, because of energy savings and other reasons, the company, you know, became more efficient. So the defrost started to work based on compressor one time. Compressor one time means that the hours is not your clock times, the hours is the compressor one time. So as long as the compressor works, the earlier the defrost turn on. And some refrigerators, some companies are
so
working...
Why is the defrost, explain to the people listening, why is the defrost more problematic than the compressor?
Oh, so basically the action that we are doing is exactly the same. It's still something that we're just opening the door, we are goyrim, and a kind of psikresha, but the only difference is that the results is a deraisa. And we just said that...
And the reason why the results are because the defrost is by heating an element red hot.
Yes. So that's basically the reason why the issue became much more of an issue.
So what was the solution to that?
So let's get to the solution. Let me get to one more generation, and then we'll get to the solution. So what we have then third generation, that the computerized refrigerators, which is in the last 4 or 5 years and getting much more popular, of course, is everything getting advanced. With many features, actually today in every refrigerator you have a built-in chip, which is like a computer, taking care of many things. Count your door opening, there's a door alarms, there's a very, very sensitive thermostat, digital thermostat, that counting many things, counting the temperature, counting the weight on the shelves, as more expensive your refrigerator will be, it's going to be much more features to that. So that is very, very problematic. Even when we'll get to the bottom of it, what exactly the issue to working with a computer, we will be struggling between Boine or Koisev or Moili Derabonon or something like that. But the issue is that we're doing it directly. The sensors are located in the door. When you're opening and closing the door, you affecting these sensors directly.
So for this, Rabbi Heinemann has a solution that on his Shabbos modes, the computers don't work, I believe.
So it's not working to a certain extent that the result is not happening, but the pulse to the computer is still working. So we can say, okay, I don't need that. It's mutter,
Yeah, let's go through it. It would be mutter because it's a davar she'ena miskaven, and it's also a malacha she'ena tzricha legufa that it's leinichale. It's davar she'ena miskaven. It's leinichale. You don't care whether the computer works or not.
Yeah,
and it's a drabbanan. So even though a machber like that by the aruch that the sikreishes by davar she'ena miskaven is aser by leinichale, but by a drabbanan the Mishnah Berurah in a number of places would be matter it.
Not really, because the Mogen Avraham basically in Shin Yedalat is stating that the condition to be Matir Apsikresha Beis and Rabbanon need to have a Kelach Hayat condition, and need to have a Mekalkel condition, and then you can use Psikresha Den Nichalei. So Kelach Hayat, you can debate if such a kind of thing called Kelach Hayat or not, because, it's made for it, we can argue about it, but the Mekalkel you can find here. So basically you need these four conditions to be matir is the rabbanon even bepsikreisha.
You also always have b'maka mitzvahs for sure mutter, and the argument would be that on Shabbos would be b'maka mitzvah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That could be. So again, so the solution is we can take it apart. You can get a 100% solution. You can get the 80% solution. A 60% solution. I believe.
So what do you do?
So I use actually. I used to have for many years. I bought directly the refrigerators that the defrost is working based on door counting, which is from one side it's a bigger problem because your action is much more directly, but to the other side that's the only way where you're taping the button, you're taking care of the defrost. Because the computer knows if you open or close the door by this door button. But later on, I got, the new solution out to the market. Zman Technology just put out a kind of a timer-like device, which I would say today in the market, that's the only 100% solution. It's technically turning off your machine. Your machine became an icebox. So by the time it's closed, you're allowed to open the fridge with any problem with nothing.
So say that again. Your solution is to...
The solution today, I would say, today in the market, once you have such a kind of a timer, they're taking care of your refrigerators on and off during Shabbos, automatically, and by the time the machine is closed, You're allowed to open the door with no any issues. You're not affecting nothing. Not the defrost, not the compressor, not the thermostat, not the lights.
So you put in you put a timer onto your refrigerator.
Yeah, it's a smart controller just out in the market on Pesach time, which has the Jewish calendar built in, so you know it's working by itself from Knesset HaShabbos till it's Yitzhak HaShabbos, giving you certain breaks that you could choose before to close or open the door. And by the time to close or open the machine, so by the time the machine is closed, you're allowed to open the door with no any consideration of nothing. So that will be the best solution today. Going forward with different solutions, you know, you can use a Shabbos mode to certain refrigerators having Shabbos mode if you're, you know, trusting that thing that we just discussed about it. Then you can go, you know, down the road, you can say, you know, I don't care about the defrost, even if it's a deraisa, you know, it's still Zekresha, Gromer, Vechule. So I will be worried only on the computer issue, so I'll tape the button. Or I'll put a magnet in case of a sensor. If I'll find where the sensor are located, you can have four or five sensors in refrigerators. You can put a magnet over there. And you can say, you know, I can care less about that also. You know, there's no black and white over here. You can always find an opinion from some rabbis. You'll tell you we have enough Ethereum. The question is, are we looking for Ethereum or are we looking to be the best?
So the best you say is to put a timer in and only open it when it's closed. Now, yeah. Rabbi Ortner, if you put a timer in, then when you open it, it's not a psikresha anymore on the defrost.
Right.
Right? So you could perhaps even open it once you put a timer in, even when it's open.
Talking about the defrost, you can be right. Right. But we're talking about any other issues of the sensor and things.
Yes, the sensor. Right. Now, what would you say about asking a shahulis, rather, do you disagree with? Besides the patent in the oven, where you say it's actually one thing, it's not a grum anymore. Are there any other of his solutions that you're dubious of?
Yeah, you know, most of his solutions are very respected and very nice and good. For example, talking about the warm drawers and the ovens. His Shabbos mode is taking care on any direct action, meaning, you know, you have the lights and there's some sensors today. The Shabbos mode is deactivating these things, or the 12 hours safety feature, the Shabbos mode is deactivating that. But otherwise, there's no argument here, you know, between you know, me and Weinemann. I think Weinemann is an opinion for more of a chumra of the old things. He's much more machmer on a compressor, much more machmer on the ovenness in these things. The only question is how we solve the issue, how we solve the problem. And let's not forget that there's an 80% market without any Shabbos mode. So we don't have an argument about the issue. We can argue to some details about how to make the solution, but the issue is a very big issue. The issue which exists, you know, in every Yiddish home, refrigerators and ovens, even without Shabbos mode, or sometimes...
The knowledge of this sugya is obviously so vast, and it's such an important sugya, that the 25 minutes we allotted to you is like just the tip of the iceberg, and we would love to have you on at a later time so that we can continue this very important topic, because Shmira Shabbos is So thank you very much, and we would like to have you on at another time to continue this.
I'm looking forward. Thank you, Abdovin. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Have a wonderful Shabbos, Kolta.
Bye-bye.
We have on the phone with us Jonah Attensasser, who is a mechanical engineer with 30 years of experience. He actually did engineering for the Navy in their helicopter division, and he now works as a consultant for the Star K, that's Rabbi Heinemann, and he is their expert on the engineering issues that go into keeping Shabbos, all the different ovens, refrigerators, accessories that we use for Shmira Shabbos. Welcome, Mr. Attensasser.
Welcome. Nice to talk to you.
So, Mr. Attenfasser, can you tell us what are the potential problems in using a modern oven, either on Shabbos or Yom Tov?
Okay, there are quite a few. When I started this, the main issue was companies have gone to a 12-hour cutoff. In other words, for whatever reason, they felt for safety purposes that the oven could not be left on continuously longer than 12 hours. And that's how really the Starkey got involved, because KitchenAid, a summer intern, realized that, and he eventually contacted the Starkey, and then the Starkey contacted me because I happened to live on the same block as the president of the Starkey. So that was really how we got started. And then, of course, things have snowballed because technology has impacted everything. You have displays, digital displays that read the temperature, and when you change the temperature, the display changes. You have icons that tell you when the door is open. You have alarms that go off, not so much in ovens, but in refrigerators. You have when you open and close the door at times, they want to protect their equipment and hopefully not burn. The consumer sticks his head close to the oven, so they turn off some of the heating elements sometimes right away. So those are the basic items that we deal with, and we try to make it usable for the kosher consumer.
So wait, so let me just, because you covered a lot of different points there. So okay. Let's say my wife put the chalent into the oven on Shabbos, and she put it at 300 degrees, whatever the number is. I'm not a chef.
Right, usually 200.
Okay, 200. Can she open the door on Shabbos if the light is on? In other words, if the heat is on, so there's no thing of, you know, to have that little thing that shows the heat is on, would that be problematic?
Okay, so if it does not have a Starkey certified mode and has an oven door switch, there's a potential that when she opens the door, she's going to immediately be shutting off a heating element when she opens the door. And when she closes the door, she's going to be, again, engaging a heating element right away without any delays.
She's saying it. And how would you know that? Like, would the oven have, like, is there any way to know? Because the oven we have at home is, I mean, it doesn't seem all that sophisticated, quite honestly. You know, I don't see any.
Are you talking about a range? In other words, it's like
a Wolf, one of those sort of semi-industrial. It does not seem to have a computer or anything. So, like, what type of ovens would that be?
Okay, so if you have a Wolf, and if the Wolf is less than 15 years old, it has a computer. Everything pretty much is governed in the oven world, is governed by a control board. If you ever take it apart, it looked like the inside of your laptop or a desktop computer. So they're all controlled by that. So as far as the question of can your wife open the door, so on the built-ins, they all play games with the heating elements when you open the door. Now, the Wolf actually... It happens to be, and the other thing I might mention as an aside, there are so many different models, even within the same company, and they're not all the same, even with the same company. So we were just dealing with the Wolf. There's a Series M and a Series E. The Series M shuts off the heating elements and puts them back on with a Grumma. The Series E does not do anything with the heating elements. Don't ask me why one yes, why no, but that's the Matthias as far as the Wolf oven in particular.
So you're saying that if you have a non-Starkey oven and you keep the chalent in on Shabbos, every time you open the door, at least with a Wolf, you maybe have an issue of Grumma, which is a drabanan on Shabbos. It's mutta b'makom seda. But for the most part, certainly lechatchila would be aser to open the door.
Okay, so we're getting to halacha. I'll just tell you what Rabbi Heinemann says. On Shabbos, you can open the door at any time and take everything out and then close the door. Okay, and then we get into the details, which, you know, I'd rather not get into, but, you know, it's in your Hachas and Sila Gufa, and the Lo Ichbus Le, Do Nichle, and so on. That's where we get into, but that's his opinion on the ovens on Shabbos.
You know, even though it's Grama, he holds a Grama, Bamakam, the Lo Nichle, and Amlacha Shein Sriha Le Gufa, he would be Mater.
Correct.
Okay.
Along those lines, right.
Can you give us a few other potential issues with ovens, which is outside of refrigerators, the most used item in a probably in a kosher kitchen?
Okay. So the of course there's the issue of changing the temperature on Yom Tov. Now I should preface that we didn't coin the word Sabbath mode, and some people have said it's misleading. People will say Sabbath mode; they can do whatever they want on Shabbos once they're in Sabbath mode, but we take the analogy to a Shabbos blech. Just because you put a blech on there doesn't mean you can do whatever you want. There's still halachas on when to return it, when to not, fully cooked, and so on. So we list on the Star K webpage, we try to guide people with the specific halachas to their products and also general description of what you can or can't do on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. So there comes the issue of changing the temperature on Yom Tov. And part of the problem is the digital display. So almost all modern ranges and ovens have a digital display, now, though some of them are going backwards to knobs, but most of them have digital displays, and you really can't do that. When you adjust the temperature, the digital display will change. So we blank that out in those that are Star K certified. And then, of course, the issue of dealing with the computer, so we put a delay into, in other words, the computer recognizes that you want to change the temperature, but we have either a fixed or random delay between the time it recognizes it and between the time it actually engages that new set point.
So you're saying that every time you raise or lower the temperature, even though on Yom Tov, it would be mutter as long as the flame is still on, right? But the issue is, you're saying, that it sends a message to a computer.
Well, not really. There are two ways that you can raise or lower the temperature on Yom Tov. One is if you know when the power is on. For example, that's why I recommend anybody who builds a new kitchen, if at all possible, to get gas. Because gas, you can see the flame, and you can raise the temperature when the flame is there and lower it when it's off. The electric fired, and unfortunately most of the built-ins are electric fired, you can't do that unless you install, now some ovens come with that, but unless you install a sort of a indicator light that cycles with power. So again, on Yom Tov, you could be Moses, right? You can add fuel, so to speak, when it's on, and remove or lower the temperature when it's off. So those are the two ways. Either we put a delay in, so it's a grumma, or if you can actually see what's going on, then you would raise it when the power is on, lower when it's off. For example, one of the modern things are these smooth tops, the glass cooktops. I don't know if you've seen them, where the burners are what's called ribbon elements. They're a circle embedded in the glass that glows to orange and then cycles on and off. So unless you're at either end, at the very low end or very high end, you can raise it a little bit when it cycles to on and lower it when it cycles to off for cooking purposes.
Right, so let me just preface what you're saying, because some of our listeners may not know that, but on Yom Tov, the Mechaba seemingly, the Ramah, I think it's in a Tafkuf Yadalad, seemingly seems to imply that Grama on Yom Tov is Mutter, that way the Mishnah Berurah learns, whereas Grama on Shabbos, I think it's in Shin Lamed Dalad, the Ramah says that Grama on Shabbos is only Mutter B'makam Pseida. So Grama on Yom
Tov,
so Grama on Yom Tov is more kill, so you're saying, therefore, Rabbi Heinemann sort of worked out a way to do it al yedei grama, which I understand is a little bit controversial.
Yes, okay.
And just shortcut, what the controversial part is that Grumma is often where it's not direct causality. So, for example, if you put a candle outside and there's no wind blowing, and a few minutes later a gust of wind comes, so the Rama in Tavkuf Yudalad would say that that's called a Grumma. But if I do something that's absolutely certain because I'm pressing a button, but it comes with a delay of 30 seconds, there are many opinions that that is not a grumma, and that is a separate issue, that beyond that's not an engineering issue, it's more a halachic issue.
Right, right. And now we do try to have that delay random, but it doesn't always work out that way for whatever reason.
Okay.
But you're right. I think the way you summarize it is correct.
So, Mr. Anser, what is the what is the potential halachic problems of a cooktop on Shabbos?
Of doing it.
Okay. Now, what are the potential issues of modern refrigerators on Shabbos and Yom Tov?
Okay.
So, refrigerators have been around a long time. I think Moshe Feinstein, Alav Shalom, was addressed that question. The basic refrigerator has a compressor and cycles on and off depending on the cavity temperature. Okay, so now what happens is they've become fancy. You have refrigerators that have all kinds of displays. Some of the displays go on when you open the door. Some displays are through the door. Actually, outside the door you have a display. It'll display the set temperature, but when you open the door, it'll display the actual temperature, which of course will change if you leave the door open long enough. And there's the issue of the ice maker and the water dispensers, which, some different discussion as to whether you can or can't use them on Shabbos and Yom Tov.
So let's talk about the displays first.
Right.
What are the potential solutions for the displays?
Okay, most of the time, if you take down the door switch, the display just stays off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the ones that are StarKey certified, of course, we take care of that in the software. But if you tape it down, then the display stays off, and your alarms stay off to the extent it always thinks the door is closed. It does not engage the timer. Those are taken care of. Really, the long pole in the tent, if you want to use that cliche, is the defrost cycle. What happens is, in the good old days, I don't know what you have, but your parents or grandparents used to unplug the refrigerator periodically and the ice used to drip down and make a mess. And that's how you defrosted the ice that builds up around the freezer. Modern refrigerators have automatic defrosting. And what happens is a glowing wire comes on that melts the ice that's built up around the evaporator. Because ice, to a certain extent, is an insulator, and your compressor will be working harder and harder as the ice builds up. To make it more efficient, what the companies have gone to is what's called compressor runtime. In other words, every time the compressor is on, electricity is provided to a clock that will eventually trip, let's say, after 10 hours of compressor runtime, and say, oops, I got to stop now, and I got to take care of defrosting the ice. So then a glowing wire comes on. The question is, every time you open the door on Shabbos, you're putting more heat in. And as you put more heat in, the compressor will run longer. If the compressor runs longer, it'll get to that trip time where it'll turn on a glowing wire on Shabbos, and you've contributed to that by every time you open the door. So,
but it doesn't happen instantaneously. This happens at random times throughout Shabbos, right?
Well, it's cumulative. In other words, every time you open the door, cold air drops out and warm air goes in. So the more you do that and the longer you have the door open, the longer the compressor will run and the sooner the automatic defrost will engage.
Why is that more problematic than opening the door and ultimately the compressor is going to have to come on because into the cavity warm air is coming in. So since that is certainly at a grumma that is not instantaneously, which I believe was the reason why Ramesha was moderate, why would
right.
this be more problematic?
Oh, okay. So, again, I'm stepping into halachic areas. Electric power is the malacha derabanan. Havara is the malacha deraisa. So the question is this gram havara? And I will tell you that the ones that we star case certify, it goes, the frost cycle goes on at a fixed time, no matter how many times you do or don't open the door.
And the reason why, just let me explain what Mr. Ansas is saying, is that the reason why it would be Havara is because any time a coil gets red hot, right, the Rambam Paskins, that has
right.
a din of Vishal, it's Vishal of the lead. So that has a din of a deraisa, according to the Rambam, which is angenomen, which is accepted by the Shulchan Aruch and Paiskim today.
Right.
So whereas electricity, for the most part, absent the Chazei Nish, would be a drabanan.
Right.
So,
right.
but it would be a question of a gram havara.
Right.
Well, it's really a suffic gram havara because you never really know. It's a suffic
okay.
gram
yeah.
havara. Okay.
Well,
you're probably going to engage it because. It depends a little bit about the cycle time of your refrigerator. In other words, if you have normal usage, though Shabbos is probably abnormal usage, if your refrigerator runs 20 minutes out of the hour, that means after 8 hours, if 8 hours is your cutoff time, you'll, after 24 hours, which is one third, 20 minutes and a third of an hour, and after 24 hours, you will have accumulated 8 hours of compressor runtime. If that's the threshold, you may well trip the frost cycle.
So can you give us very briefly the sort of the improvements, the takanis that Rabbi Heinemann and the Starke have put into their certified, give us like a snapshot of what they are and what problems they bypass, okay?
You talking about the refrigerator or talking about the...
Both. Give us a synopsis of both refrigerator and oven, what he's done.
Well, let's start with the refrigerators. Essentially, what we've done is we've eliminated, in many cases, we've eliminated the ice maker and the water dispenser. Sometimes you have to manually disconnect it. We've eliminated alarms.
What does that mean? What does it mean you've eliminated it?
When you go into Sabbath mode, you don't have any dispensing functions anymore.
And a dispensing function would cause what problem? This is very interesting. A lot of people don't notice they have refrigerators that dispense cold water. What's the problem?
The problem there would be either you opening an electric valve or more likely you're engaging a pump to pump out the cold water. And also there's an auger motor that spits out the ice. Now, of course, there's slush and there's all kinds of variation on this, but essentially, the way you could test it is unplug your refrigerator and ask for dispensing, and you'll see it does not dispense. So it's an electric
okay.
provider.
Okay. And on the ice side, removing ice from your freezer on Shabbos, what's the problem there?
Okay. So the ice is a question, a little bit of a question of Nolad. Question if you're going to be using, in other words, if you keep taking ice out, eventually the bar will drop down and start making ice again. Now, the ice process is somewhat of a complicated process, and that actually includes a heating element. Now, I don't know if it goes to glowing, but what happens is it lets water in and it makes the ice, and then for it to break the seal between the ice and the tray, a heating element comes on to sort of melt the ice a little bit so that the ice maker can tip over and drop out the ice. So,
again, you could be, by taking ice, you could be a gram of, at the minimum of a gram of an isidrabanan of causing the other ice, the motor,
perhaps.
To act, or possibly if it glows, which you're uncertain.
I'm
could be a
about,
so he detached, so he basically he on the Shabbos mode, neither the water or the ice work. That's in a refrigerator. I imagine
right.
the displays don't work as well. Is that correct?
The displays don't work. In most cases, the alarms don't work either. Some companies are very antsy for legal reasons because people are getting sued for everything. So In other words, part of the problem in our modern society is once you can provide an alert, you're negligent if you don't provide that alert. So if the door is open too long and they're afraid of spoilage, they'll provide an alarm. Now, most of the time, you're not going to engage in the alarm. One or two of the brands, and we have like 27 brands, will still have an alarm, even in the Shabbos mode. But when it goes off, it will go off after 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever it is. It'll beep for, let's say, 5 minutes and go off by itself and just leave a display that says, I don't know what it says exactly, door jar or whatever. Most of them, we just disengage the alarm also. So those are eliminated. We also try to help this issue of the, in other words, when you open, sometimes the compressor is sort of sitting there right at the edge where a little more heat will engage the compressor. So we put a delay so when you open the door, you're never going to directly, immediately open, engage the compressor.
Right.
And then, of course, with the frost cycle, we change the time not to compressor on time, but we change it to clock time, straight clock time.
So, Mr. Johnson, where does one get a list of the different names that offer a Shabbos mode that the Star K gave out? Mr. Ottensasser, I have at least another 20 questions, but we're out of time. We'd love to have you on again. This is really fascinating. Thank you for all the work you do. On behalf of Shmira Shabbos in America.
Okay, take care.
We have on the phone with us Rabbi Eliezer Schwartz, who's the Rav of Oyev Tzedek in the Upper West Side, one of the larger shuls in the Upper West Side. He's a smach of Yeshivas Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, and he recently finished a pirush, he finished annotating a pirush from Ksav Yad of the great, the Mekubala, he's called by the Rishonim, the Mekubala Eloikai, Rabbi Eliezer Bal Rekeach, Rabbi Eliezer the Perfumer, a pirush on Mishlei that until recently was only b'ksav yad. So he's both, you will hear, both a tzaddik as well as a scholar. Welcome, Rabbi Schwartz.
Shalom Aleichem. If I can just make two corrections. It's Elozar, not Eliezer.
Okay.
Is the name, not my name is Eliezer, but the Rekeach was Elozar. And he was not a perfumer. He chose the title of the book, Rokeach, because that's the gematria of Elozar. So everything in the Sefer is sodos nifloos, amazing hints and remozim of Torah in through gematrias and atbash and many things like that. So that's just, I'm sorry for the slight correction.
So Rabbi Schwartz, can you tell us, We got your name from a Mrs. Ridner, Shelley Ridner, and she told us a wonderful story about the chassadim you do in your shul, and particular about the gloves. Can you tell us about your gloves campaign?
Well, this started about 20 years ago. Is that there was a person in the shul who dealt, especially at the end of December, the beginning of January, with bulk items for gifts. And I just told him, you know, it's getting cold now. You probably have these fancy gloves. Why don't you send me a couple of 100 gloves, and we'll use it to give out to poor people in the community at the time. You know, New York, this is even maybe 25 years ago, New York had a lot of, people in Broadway in the 80s, 90s, and the 100s who were just walking around begging. And, you know, you're always told if you give them money, they'll just use it for alcohol or something that's not good for them. So, but you know what? They're cold. They need gloves. They need scarves. They need hats. So this person started off with a few hundred. Then it became 1,000, and it just took on a life of its own. And we keep them in the shul, and we say, do a mitzvah with these gloves. Spread goodwill, and we give them to anybody. The criteria is not what you look like or what color you are or what religion you are. Just the criteria is you're cold, and it has spread such phenomenally goodwill over the years. Sometimes I've run into packs of people who seem to be tourists, and they didn't expect it to be so cold here, and I happen to be walking with a shopping bag of scarves and gloves, and it's also a profound Kiddush Hashem, because we all look Jewish, you know, it's just it spreads profoundly goodwill. It's wonderful.
Now, have any other shuls or people you know adopted this? You know, has it caused any type of a glove contagion?
Good question. Over the years, sometimes one or two shuls have tried it. I have to say the name of they're such anovim. So it's Marvin and Deborah Sternberg, and it's a little plug for them that they supply us every year with these. Sometimes it's gloves and scarves. Sometimes it's hats. One time we gave to a public school on 113th Street on the East Side in East Harlem. And we gave hundreds of gloves, scarves, and hats. And it was such Kiddush Hashem, the principal had all the kids in the school send notes to the shul. And we made a collage. We filled a whole wall with these collages. And the notes were so sad. They said, thank you. It's my first pair of gloves. Thank you so much. I sleep with the hat on because we have no heat in the house. Thank you, the scarf I take to school. It's such an amazing, amazing thing. And we kept all of those. We had it up for that season, but I kept all those. It's 100, 150 of these notes where they're made with crayons. And they printed up, thank you, Ohev Tzedek. Thank you. And some of them even made Jewish stars. And, you know, it was just an amazing Kiddush Hashem.
I'll tell you, let me share with you. My grandfather, Zuchan Lavracha, it's another example, and I'm usually, you know, people who do this, it comes in clusters of some other chassadim that your shul, or pick one other chassid that your shul does that you've initiated?
You know, we think on the West Side, it's probably the highest rents and the highest tuitions and in the whole world, but you'd be surprised. You can't even say it because it's, of course, it's matan b'seser, but you can't say it. But there are people here who can't afford their rent, who can't afford tuitions. So you say, okay, don't live here. But, you know, they're living here 30, 40 years, and they're whatever now, if they would move from their apartment and try to find an apartment even in Forest Hills, Washington Heights, I don't want to, you know, it would be even more expensive than what they're paying. So there are people, it has to be matan b'seser, because they're very proud that they, you know, they lived here for so long, and there's a lot of this going on, tuitions, rents, and you know, there are wonderful programs here with, you know, certainly the whole community is involved with the Tomchei Shabbos. It's really a... Look, the Yidden are all Rachmanim b'nei Rachmanim. I'm not inventing any wheels here. I'm involved with Masbiya and places in Brooklyn and of course, in Eretz Yisrael. And, you know, the Yidden have tremendous, tremendous limud zchus for our people and melitza for our people. And
first, I'm joining the OZ glove team. And believe me, that will go out. I think I'll do it on Amazon today. I'm going to buy 25 pairs of gloves, and I'm going to give them out over the course of the year cold.
Gewaldig. Well, these people buy it in bulk, like thousands, so, you know, you get it a lot cheaper. But there you go. Please come by 124 West 95th Street. Pick up a pair of gloves, pick up a scarf, pick up a hat, and share it with someone that's cold.
Thank you very much for inspiring us, Rabbi Schwartz.
Shkoyach to you. Be well. Have a good Shabbos. Bye-bye.